been a lot of changes in our country, even in my lifetime, which is not as long as some others here, but longer than many of you. And one of those things is we've had a great influx in the last few years of people from various countries around the world, but bringing with them a religion that is kind of foreign, I think, to most of us. And I'm talking about those that are bringing the religion of Islam, Muslim religion, various ways of describing it. And although it's not going to really be within the scope of the lesson to talk about their concept of God, I do want to state that when they refer to God, there's Allah, he is not to be equated with Jehovah God. A lot of people, religious people, I don't know that a lot of Christians make that mistake, but you'll even hear it on television sometime. They'll say, well, you know, we all serve the same God. No, we don't. Their concept of God is not biblical, so therefore they do not serve the God that is revealed to us in the Bible. For one thing, Jesus Christ is not a divine being in the religion of Islam. He's a prophet, not the prophet, but a prophet, and he's certainly not to be considered as part of the Godhead in their view of it. So just having that out of the way. Lessons from tragedy. Now the tragedy here is, of course, as we talked in the first lesson about all that God has done to establish his existence that we might be able to believe in him, that we have all these people now around the world. And by the way, they're growing. For one thing, they're having a lot of children. And so this is going to be a real force to reckon with should they ever increase in numbers to the extent where they are the majority. If you're wondering what will happen if that happens, don't look any further than the countries that they control now by their Sharia law to know exactly what will happen. It will not be a good day for Christians, even if you were to use that term in a very loose way, which most of the time in the news stories, that's how they're using it, very loosely. But you recognize, of course, the fall of the Twin Towers, one of them, and over there, the character on the right-hand corner, Osama bin Laden. That really was a day of tragedy for our country. Tragedy, of course, comes in a lot of different forms, and it hits without warning sometime, as Job found out, Job chapter 1, loss of even up to his children. And so Job knew what it was to experience tragedy. Violent deaths, such as on 9/11. Violent. I mean, you can close your eyes and still, maybe if you ever did see the videos of the towers in particular falling, and I think they should have showed them every day and keep on showing them every day, but our media got those bad pictures out of the way real quick so they could further their agenda, but that's another story. But you can still see, if you ever saw them originally, those people jumping out of the windows. Of course, falling to their death, but they were going to die anyway. Terrible, terrible thing, terrible tragedy. Sometimes it's a serious illness or death of a loved one that can or cannot maybe come suddenly. Well, what do we do in the face of these kinds of tragedies? Well, we have to accept it as Job did and learn from it and go on. Job accepted the fact that God not only had given him a lot of good things in life, but had also given him some adversity. And it was his duty, as it is our duty, to accept all of that and go on with our trust in God. But what can we learn from this particular tragedy here of the mindset of people who would do something like that, who do not believe in God as revealed in the Bible? They have rejected that God in favor of their own. Well, we learn that believing a lie has consequences. Some people think, well, so what? Just leave them alone. Leave all these religions alone. Everybody's going the same place anyway. No, that's not true. And that when people believe a lie, there are some serious consequences. This attack was carried out by Muslim extremists, as have been almost all the attacks, going back several decades for that matter. Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, lived from 573 to 632 A.D. One of his wives was very wealthy, so he really didn't have to work. And he spent a lot of his time just wandering around the desert, stopping off in this cave or that cave, and he would hear voices. And to the discredit of his wife, she said, well, maybe God is trying to talk to you. And he believed it. And as a result of all that kind of effort, she should have told him, honey, why don't you go get a job and quit roaming around like that? But she didn't. She took that as for him to use that as some kind of sign from above. And so now we have to deal with him and his book, the Quran. And so he claims all of these visions, of course, over a period of about 23 years. And the result of that was the Quran, even though he was illiterate. It's kind of hard for an illiterate man to write a book, but he did. Anyway, it contradicts the Bible and itself. As those of you, probably a lot of you know these things, this is nothing new. It's not even consistent with itself. That's one of the hallmarks of the authenticity of the Bible. There's no contradictions in it. But when men write books, it's hard for them, indeed almost impossible for them, to not have some contradictions in it. These attackers of our nation believed a lie. Now, the Quran sends out mixed signals on that sort of thing. In one place, a couple different places, it tells them to fight and to slay the pagans. Now, that's you and me. We're pagans because we're not Muslim. Wherever you find them, that's their justification for holy war, jihad. But on the other hand, if you go to other place in the Quran, it says there's to be no compulsion in religion, that they were not to force people to submit to what the Quran said. So you can see how that some of them would take advantage of that first statement and not pay too much attention to other verses that might not hold other people accountable for refusing their religion. I'm not really sure why there are contradictory verses like that in there, except that he initially thought that he would be accepted by others who believed in just one God. He thought that the Jews would accept him, and the, quote, Christians, as they used the term, would accept him, and he found out they wouldn't. And maybe that's when the message changed. Who knows? But some use these differences then to their own end. They have believed a lie. Allah is not God. He's not. But they have believed it. And because of that false teaching, they are condemned. Being deceived is deadly. The number of them in our country is growing, almost exponentially, in a sense. But it is a deadly deception. You remember what Paul said to the Thessalonians over there in chapter 2 about the danger of believing a lie. How was it that some of the Thessalonians were being deceived? It's because they were not accepting the truth. They did not have a love for the truth. Let's just look at a couple of these verses. Verse 10, with all the deception of wickedness for those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth so as to be saved. That's why they believe a lie. They don't love the truth. God will send upon them, verse 11 says, a deluding influence so that they might believe what is false, in order that all may be judged who did not believe the truth but took pleasure in wickedness. And that's not the only false doctrine out there that people choose. There's a number of them, but that's a deadly one. And so these false prophets are to be reckoned with. God does not compel someone. He desires all men to be saved. Paul wrote about that in 1 Timothy 2:4. But he does not compel anyone to become a Christian. Whereas, again, some of their verses in the Quran teach compulsion. You obey or you die. You know, you could, I suppose in a sense, your religion could grow pretty fast if you only give two people those choices. You either accept what we're teaching or we're going to kill you. You could probably have a large number of converts all of a sudden. Not genuine convert, but they might just say, yeah, you know what, I've been thinking about believing that anyway. That's why we're warned about false teachers, because believing a lie has consequences. That's why Acts 17:11, the Bereans searched the scriptures. Why? You mean they didn't believe men like the Apostle Paul? They didn't want to be deceived. They searched the scriptures to see whether these things were so. In 1 John 4:1, John warns us, try the spirits, test them, for many false prophets have gone out into the world. We've got to examine what men say so that we do not believe a lie, because believing a lie has consequences. We also learn from that tragedy that there are some questions we cannot answer. You know, we like to have answers, don't we? We like answers. We want to have all of our questions answered, if we can. When we're a child, especially, we ask a lot of questions. I had to limit my youngest son, Tim, to 500 questions a day. I finally told him he asked more questions than anybody ever heard of. He should have been asking somebody that had some brains, I know, but he was asking me. And finally I said, Tim, you're just going to have to limit that 500 a day, son. But sometimes we want answers and we can't find them because they're not to be found for us. There are some questions that we can't answer. Some people believe that that was an act of God, what happened, that being punished. They believe that hurricanes are an act of God, punishing a certain group of people that live in the path of the hurricane. There's no way that anybody knows that sort of thing. Now, God has, in punishing unrighteous nations in the past, of course, brought tragedy upon them. There's no doubt about that. Righteousness exalts a nation. Sin is reproached to any people, the proverb writer said. And God will eventually punish nations for their ungodliness, but we're not able to put our finger on a particular thing, as far as I know, and say that was punishment for some particular sin. Yes, God does deal with the nations. The book of Daniel especially is pretty clear about that, as well as other places, but Daniel shows us that a lot, that God was dealing with Nebuchadnezzar. God was convincing Nebuchadnezzar, you're not as great as you think you are. And when Nebuchadnezzar exalted himself, you remember what happened to him. He had to live like an animal till he finally recognized the God of heaven that was in control, not Nebuchadnezzar. And so we understand these kinds of things. We know that God did work that way and persuaded actually that he still is in control of the nations today. I think that's what Paul was getting at in Acts chapter 17 and verse 26. I was talking to, it was Kirby and Sue about a preacher one time. I mean, Sean might even know him, George Lemasters. Yeah, I figured he would. He got in the pulpit one time prior to 1969. Now you have to know that fact, because what happened in 1969? Man landed on the moon, or at least most people believe they did. George over here out of Acts chapter 17, when it talks about the boundaries of man's habitation, built a pretty good sermon on the fact that that's why man will never land on the moon. God put a boundary here. We're trapped here in this atmosphere and so forth. Well, he's had several people over the years that have teased him about that. But he had to change his outline. We talked about that in class this morning. Sometimes you have to change what you believe. What's this talking about? It's not talking about that. It's talking about the boundaries in time of the existence of various nations. He made from one every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation. God determines how powerful a nation is going to get. He determines how long he's going to tolerate various nations. But again, to come back and say, well, 9/11 was a judgment on the United States. No doubt about it. We can't say that. That is a question we cannot answer, as far as I know. Now, we don't want to repeat the mistake of Habakkuk's people in his day of the Jews. who, when being punished by the Babylonians, all they could think about was, well, why are you doing that? Why are you allowing them to do this? They're worse than we are. That's not God's standard of judgment. He doesn't grade on the curve. It doesn't matter how righteous a nation is compared to other nations. God looks for the righteousness that ought to be in that nation. And when he doesn't find it, eventually, on his own schedule, he brings them down. And that's what Paul was talking about. Well, there's no doubt about it. America has left its roots in losing it loosely. The founders of our country, for the most part, believed in God. Now, they had a lot of false concepts about God, but they actually did believe that there was a God. They're trying to rewrite history to say they didn't, but they did. And it's even in their writings. They recognized a need for God. We don't hear a lot about that so much anymore. Now, when leaders express their faith in God, they're mocked and scorned, laughed at, called all kinds of names. But the founders apparently weren't ashamed to put their name to documents that expressed what they believed about God. Be diligent in teaching others. There's all this race of people out here bringing this false religion in. They need to be taught. We have the truth. Sanctify them through the truth. Thy word is truth. John 17:17. What happens is, though, when tragedy strikes, men think in their own terms and say, well, we need to unite us all together. That's what that word ecumenism is. We'll be ecumenical. We'll all just lay aside our differences and concentrate together on something. Well, the only problem with that is that doesn't work and it's not biblical. There's one Lord, one faith, one baptism. There's not a multiplicity of faith, no more than there is a multiplicity of gods or baptism. There's one. And we have to stand firm on that. But shame on America for its immorality and lack of respect for human life. Shame on us as a nation. But that tragedy teaches us there's questions we can't answer. And it teaches us about the brevity and the uncertainty of life. Those victims that day were just going about their normal routine, weren't they? What they did every day. Some died because they changed their normal routine. You probably heard those stories as they interviewed people as well as I did. They were lamenting the fact that their husband or their wife or their brother or their father or their mother normally would not have been there in the course of their daily routine, but they changed it that day. Maybe they had an appointment or something. There were others who died because they kept their normal routine. And, of course, that always leads to the inevitable, what if? What if they hadn't kept their normal routine or changed it? What if? Well, those questions are out there, but there's no answer to those because that's not what happened. And we're never prepared for bad news. We get bad news, and it's heartbreaking when we do, about a loved one, either their death or their serious illness or something. And we don't like to have to deal with that. We may even be tempted to deny that it's possible. That's almost a normal stage of grieving. Some amount of denial. The day I found out my little sister was killed in a car wreck, I just couldn't believe it. I was a basket case for the first 24 to 48 hours. I said, this can't be. That just can't happen. But it did. And the more sudden things like that happen, I think it's more probable to have that kind of denial about it. Life is just brief. Some people blame God, as I said earlier. Where was God when this happened? Well, same place he was when his son was dying on the cross. And we live as if there's going to be a tomorrow. That there will always be a tomorrow. Don't we? In spite of the fact we know intuitively and scripturally that's not a good position to take. What is your life, James said, is but a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes away. We don't have a promise of tomorrow. Our life can be over quickly. So we live life to the fullest. That was the advice of the writer of Ecclesiastes to the young especially. Go out and enjoy life. Don't forget about the judgment. Don't forget God. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, but we are to enjoy life so long as we remember God's in charge and we are accountable to Him. Don't make the mistake the rich farmer made in Luke 12 of mapping out his life without consideration of God. And he found out, as Jesus related that, "Thou fool, this night your soul will be required of you." And then who's going to have control of all this that you've built up? Lessons from tragedy. Lessons yours. Tragedy is never easy to face. But as Christians, we have the assurance that God is with us in times of tragedy. So let's always accept the truth. Let's always believe in God, in His existence, believe His word, and live by it. And we will not be tempted to accept some of these false religions, that in the believing of that false religion, there are serious consequences. We will still always have questions we'd like an answer to, but may not get an answer, at least in this life. And life is uncertain. If you're here subject to the invitation, please let us know as we stand and sing together.